Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, hello. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Happy Monday, everybody. You know, I've been trying to think, as we kind of segment our new format out more, a proper way to start our Monday podcast. And, you know, today I'm going to try something. If you listen to Celebrity Memoir Book Club, this might sound fairly similar to how they start their podcast. They ask, like, if this was a chapter, what would you call it? But just supify it. To supify.
Mm-hmm.
Girlies, if you could write a headline, a spicy headline, a clickbait headline, an inflammatory headline about your weekend, what would it be this round?
Wow. Okay. Hold on. Let me think.
I'll start. Mine, yeah. I did not command myself to be too inflammatory, because the first thing that I could think of is that woman, 33, learns you can write things down to relieve the pressure to remember them. I, for some reason, I'm not good about writing things down. I put them in my digital calendar and then they're theoretically there, but I feel like I don't have like a mental visual of what I have to do and I get very overwhelmed. But I've also kind of like having a year of yes moment. So suddenly I just have like all these coffees and these like dinner drinks and these like events. And then you go to those and you meet more people who want to have more coffees and invite you to more events. And it's all great. It's all good stuff, but it really overwhelms me. And I was like freaking out about this week because I've had like three busy weeks in a row, which to busy people listening are like, boo fucking who. But I don't do well being like aggressively busy. But I just took like 15 minutes over the weekend to write it all down in my planner and color code everything. And I was like, I don't have enough to do.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, as a busy person, you can plan things out to, like, if you're going to be in a neighborhood, move a coffee this, or, you know, anyone can get coffee with me if you come in my neighborhood and like all that stuff, or like, oh, I'm going to plan the dog. Welcome to the busy.
Don't invite Millie. We're not going to say anything more than this other than don't invite Millie to coffee in Midtown Manhattan unless you're making her the face of your goddamn brand.
Well, don't invite me for a 9-minute coffee either. And if you invite me to coffee, buy me fucking coffee.
Pay for the coffee. And that's last week's headline.
Yeah. Last week I went to a coffee that is for this Friday, and I just sat there for like 45 minutes waiting. But, you know, I did make sure that I didn't text the person like, hey, where are you? Because this is like an important person, and I it would not have been good had I revealed that I was like, I'm here. Where are you? She would have been like, you know what? We don't need coffee anymore.
I've done that. I went to a birthday party the day before.
Oh, that's worse.
I went to the birthday, got dressed up, did my makeup. It was like I had to take the train. I was at the bar alone for 30 to 40 minutes.
Oh.
And then I realized that the birthday party was actually Saturday, not Friday.
Yes. So this will happen, you know, if I write things down. But Elise, I've always noticed that you are an aggressively – like you just, you're some, both of you, but Elise, you're somebody, like I just know that if I tell you something, it's getting written down. It's not going to be an issue. If I have something digitally, you're going to be like, I didn't have that written down. Where'd that come from? And I have to admit, well, I put it on there without telling you.
Well, okay. My high school, I don't know if this is like a thing high schools did, but my high school gave us a written planner at the top of every year. Mm-hmm. And it like rewired my brain. I cannot do a digital calendar. I have to have a written planner and I have to write everything down in it immediately upon it coming through. And like, if it is written in the planner, so it shall be. Yeah. If it does not get written in the planner, it's gone from my mind. So it's like, it can be a double-edged sword sometimes, because sometimes I'm like on the go and I don't have time to write something in the planner, and then it doesn't get written down, and suddenly I've like double booked myself or done something crazy or forgotten that something was supposed to happen or whatever. But I am a like written calendar planner bitch. I get these ones at the beginning of every year from this place called Golden Coil. And I have like, they let you pick your layout, all these little add-ons. It's like, that is my treat at the top of every year, is that I give myself this fancy planner, and it is absolutely in charge of my entire
Have you ever like lost it like meaningfully into the year?
I have never lost it, like physically lost it, but I have poured water on it and irreparably destroyed it before, and it's very bad. It really sucks, and it upsets me a lot. So.
Well, I'm a Miss Google Calendar bitch. Mm-hmm. I fucking put everything in Google Calendar. I'm talking... recently Google actually did this thing where they could spam, like brands were spamming people and adding calendar things, but like it'd be like, oh, here's like, I'm like, what's this calendar invite? And it's like 20% off sale of this thing. Like it was really fucked up. And like, I'm telling you, 2 weeks ago, they literally stopped this, but I'll put shows there. I'll put dates. I put a lot of my dates on there, you know? So when people are like, oh my God, Facebook's hacking to your information, all that shit, I'm like, too fucking late. Yeah. And also
sunk costs.
Yeah, I know. It also is good for me because sometimes I can feel like I didn't get anything done or I'm not accomplished or anything like that. And I can just look back at my month and be like, holy shit, Millie, you did all this stuff, you know? So I think that's like the good thing about digital. And yeah, if I don't write it down like immediately, it fucking, I'll forget. But I will say my pet peeve with digital calendar invites is that sometimes people, like, I'll invite people to a meeting or something like that or whatever, and someone's like, can you make a calendar invite for me? Like, they'll email me that.
That's my biggest thing with work, is that, like, I have to train myself. And if Bridget's listening, I'm not always good at this, but I do try to be like, can I accomplish this in the time that it takes me to tell this person this? Or is there a huge reason I can't? Like, I have to jump onto, like, a podcast or something.
People don't ask themselves that much.
No, definitely not.
That much. Or can I answer this question myself? If I Google, you know what I mean? People do not, like, fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. I will say, to answer your thing, though, I was thinking about this, Amanda. What's my little headline? Woman, aged undisclosed, learns, I'm just going to use the same thing because this is something I learned this week, learns that maybe 25 degrees and snowing is not the best conditions to ride a moped.
Oh.
And that's because I wanted to save $20 on an Uber. And I can feel your
chapped lips from here.
It was, you know what it was? It was literally the tears from my eyes. And then it burned on my skin because they were freezing in real time.
Oh, I don't know what the fuck.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, listen.
Wait, were the tears being produced by cold, or were you actively weeping?
No, it was cold. It was cold too. You know, your eyes water up.
Yeah.
But when you're going 12, 20 miles an hour on a road and it's like snowing, then they're like kind of freezing. It burned.
Yes. Yeah. I that day was like, oh, I can go bike to get my tires filled, but going two blocks like the right in your face. Yeah, no. Treat yourself to an Uber, Millie. Yeah.
Yeah. Danny and I, one time we visited Montreal in the winter, which was like very, very cold. And we went to see, they have like a beautiful church. I think it's called Notre Dame, also in their city center. And we went to go see it. And like the weather shock from the cold outside to the like warmth inside made Danny's eyes start watering so much that it looked like he was like overcome by the power of Christ. Like he was because he walked into this church and he was just like, ugh. And I was like, is everything good? It's a really pretty church. And he was just like, no, it's the weather. I feel great.
And then when he went to the Barbie museum, he started crying again.
But that was just about the majesty of Christ.
Elise, what's your clickbaity headline of your weekend?
Okay, my clickbaity headline, I'm going to format it differently. It's going to be one of those ones that starts with a quote right? So it's in quotations. My life has irreparably changed. Elise Morales on having her apartment professionally cleaned. Ooh, because oh my God. Did have a cleaning service come to my apartment this weekend. We've done this once before, but it was like over a year ago. And we kept being like, we should really do this like once a quarter. We should really do this once a quarter. We finally had someone come again. Everything feels different.
Amazing.
It is. I mean.
Spring in your step.
Yeah. And it's not like I live in like filth or whatever, but
in New York, I've never nothing feels clean. Same. In New York, nothing ever feels clean unless a professional has come and detailed your apartment.
Yeah. And like, there is a professional level of clean that I personally do not have the skills to attain in my apartment. And so now everything, and we have two animals. So anyway, someone came over the weekend, got a cleaning service. We sent Rusty to daycare. Danny and I went to the museum, had a lovely day, came back to a sparklingly beautiful apartment. And it just... The level of calm that has descended upon me since having my apartment cleaned.
Listen, that's my goal. My goal is, I was doing once a month cleaning service, and that's great. Once you go there, I mean, we got to put it on pause for a little bit. But my goal is twice a month. If you can get a professional cleaner twice a month, once a week is too much. Once a week is for people who don't throw out their own trash.
Yeah, if you're just a couple or like a person like,
you
short
don't need
of
once a,
week. When I was nannying, like they had their housekeeper, they had a nanny and the housekeeper cleaned everything in the house every single day.
Yeah, that's people who are like, they don't want to load a dishwasher. They don't
want
to do
shit. And they don't want dust ever.
I get it. I'm just, you know, whatever. But if I can get twice a month.
Such a treat.
Such a treat. And but yeah, exactly. Like just even once. Just coming back to a, you know what I like? Going on trips and getting a cleaning person.
Ooh, I think that's what I'm going to do. That's the next level. Yeah. Perhaps that's what we'll do next.
When you come back from your trip and the house is clean.
And the pet's already gone, so you don't really have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about like how long it's taking. Yeah. Also, this, our building is like, it's definitely pre-war, but it's just been renovated. So like the dust is just always dusting and it doesn't, my sweet husband's snoring has gotten a lot better. We're on a much better track. Thanks to a lot of money spent on various devices. But I think the main issue is just that there's fucking dust everywhere. And as soon as you clean it, it comes back. Those are all really lovely. So self, write things down, clean your apartment, and take an Uber. Do not
take
use
an Uber when it's cold.
Or a Lyft. Take or a cab, Uber. of course. Or just support. You're yellow.
Yeah.
Taxi drivers. Okay. The only thing about doing those fun intros is that then we have to get to the news.
Yeah.
But before we do that, you know what? I'm going to stretch this a little longer because you do have some very exciting comedy concerts coming up.
Yes. My comedy concert is next Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. at Union Hall in Brooklyn. I'm doing my solo show again. It is Harry Potter themed, but I don't think you have to be like a Harry Potter person to be into it. It's really mostly just like storytelling, funny experiences that I have had throughout the fandom and also like me exploring my feelings about how it's sad when someone who's your hero becomes a disappointing person.
I learned so much about you at it. Like, I didn't know that you professionally sorted people.
I did. I did tour the country sorting professionally. And I do a sorting ceremony in the show as well. So if you come, I will professionally sort you.
The woman at Mines, at the one I went to the last one, was very game.
People like to be sorted. But also, as I talk about in the show, it brings up a lot of emotions. People can become enraged. Sure. And angry and start kind of yelling at the person who sorted them, which is difficult. But I don't expect that to happen at the show. And Lorena Russi is opening. They're a really funny comedian from the CBS Showcase. And they're like a WGA nominee. Really funny. Chris Burns, Fat Carrie Bradshaw, does play Dumbledore in the show, makes a cameo. Danny makes a cameo as Midwestern Hagrid. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's, again, that's Wednesday, March 8th, International Women's Day, 7:30 in Brooklyn. Please come.
I can't wait. Oh, my God. I'm excited. I'm so excited. And on March 11th, I'm doing a show with Fat Carrie Bradshaw, Chris Burns, and
Betch at Large.
yeah, I know. What we're doing is we're doing a satirical pyramid scheme conference. So if you ever seen the LuLaRoe doc and those big conferences that they have, we're doing the same thing with the show. The premise is that me and Chris own a conglomerate of multi-level marketing schemes, and you're going to hear testimonials, you're going to see product demonstrations, you're going to see us get sued. It's going to be a fun time. It's called SchemeCon. It's at Littlefield on March 11th. Doors open at 7. Show starts at 8. It's going to be timing. Great.
Google we have Cal, a drag. Write them down.
Yes, we're going to have a drag queen, the queen of Westchester. Oh. Yeah, so you're going to hopefully you guys buy in $5,000 for some leggings. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what – don't miss out because you will be missing a lot.
I'm excited. I always just tell Mike, I'm like, I bought 2 tickets for these. I don't give him any other information. So I'm excited to just bring him up to this one blind.
Well, he's going to, you know, he'll figure it out.
Maybe I'll tell him that he does actually have to pay $5,000 for leggings at the end.
No, he could be our expert lawyer.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. I imagine you're going to need a lawyer.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So now we simply must address the news in these United States of America. Before we get into a Republican you not, I want to look back a little further than this weekend, which we just did. Did either of you take a women and gender studies class in college?
No, which I think is odd, but I didn't. I don't know. I wasn't like, I think when I was younger, even in college, I was always like, I'm a feminist, but I didn't feel like.
Yeah.
Motivated to learn more, which is like sad to admit, but that's like not where my head was at that time.
My college was really small and we had concentrations, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we took like, so all of our classes would be really broad, but then we would study things like smaller. And in anthropology, I learned a lot about matriarchies. So I can talk to you about 3 distinct matriarchies all over the country, one in China, one in Central America, and one in Africa. And it's fascinating, the matriarchies.
It is fascinating. And I guess that's maybe what Ron DeSantis doesn't want you to know. I took probably a dozen women's studies class. My favorite one was because I went to women's college. Was called Theories of Intimacy.
Ooh.
It was fantastic. Ooh. It was so hard, and she was like really hard on us the whole time. And then me and my bestie got A's, and it was like the best. I don't think that I peaked is the most rewarding.
What is a lesson that you learned, or like what was the theory that I mean?
It was
it
was a lot of like bell hooks. It was just sort of like what it actually means to be in it. It was more about like intimacy with like one another and with family members and like stuff like that. And really like all about love energy, where it's like Bell Hooks writes a lot about love, but she doesn't necessarily mean romantic love. She means like the vulnerability of love. So it was a lot about that.
It was so
great.
Cool.
I know.
Yeah.
I
really wish I had taken more
to read.
Yeah. I wish I had taken those classes. I think I was like very number one, like, just like singularly focused on making sure I got all of my credits in.
Yeah.
And it kind of
stopped me. For me, that was intimacy class.
Yeah. And because I was like an international relations major in Spanish or whatever, it was like, it stopped me from taking any classes that couldn't, like I didn't feel like I could take anything that didn't directly relate or give me credit towards my majors. So, yeah. But I also don't think I was looking.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, you know, some kids in Florida might not have this opportunity if they go to public school. So Republican you not ban gender studies classes. Jesus Christ. A new bill introduced by a Florida state representative would allow the Florida Board of Governors to tell the public universities to, quote, remove from its programs any major or minor in critical race theory, gender studies, usually like, I mean, I don't know where you can find most women's studies programs are now women in gender studies programs, and if they weren't already, or intersectionality. They also can't instruct on any derivative major or minor of these belief systems, but they don't really describe those belief systems. This bill is specifically designed to follow through on Ron DeSantis' earlier proposal to ensure taxpayers aren't paying for things like zombie studies. That is his hilarious metaphor for things like women and gender studies. The bill would also require universities to, quote, promote the philosophical underpinnings of Western civilization, and include studies of this nation's historical documents. So this is always just hilarious when they're like, we can't indoctrinate children with these things, but they must learn about the underpinnings of Western civilization.
Also, that's what fucking elementary, middle, and high school is. Like, yeah. In my elementary school, we did a whole lesson where we like pretended we were in the Revolutionary War and dressed up and like made candles and read the Constitution. And
that's drag, Elise.
A guy like it is drag because a guy who dressed as Ben Franklin did show up and like act like Ben Franklin. Like every single school I know studied the founding documents of America. There is no way you get through any amount of schooling in the country without some basic understanding yeah. of those things. And the point of college is to choose what you would like to learn more about.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's a few like really fucked up things that are happening here. But two things that I'm thinking of is, you know, again, K through 12, public school, like those are things that are all decided by a board. And, you know, again, that board tends to be conservative and they're already like children don't really get a choice. But in college, like that's supposed to be the time that you craft your schedule and all that. So, and if a class doesn't get enrollment, it gets canceled. So the thing of like, I don't want our taxpayers to pay for zombie studies. It's like, if that class gets a lot of demand, they still have to like, those professors still, and maybe there's something about tying in real world examples or scientific or whatever, like not real world, but like, fantastical examples into like real world current events and all of that. So there's that. But another thing that's disturbing about this is that in Florida, public universities and public colleges, they're not the easiest to get into, but it is like the way that many lower income people get to go to school. There's the Bright Futures Scholarship where it's like, if you get a certain amount of, if your GPA is over like three, you know, please don't quote me on this, or like 3 points, whatever, and you get this on your SATs, you get to go to college for very little or free or like a big percentages. So that's why people opt in instead of trying to go to a nice private school, or not nice, but like a private school or an Ivy. They go to University of Florida. They go to UCF, which is University of Central Florida, to save their family money and also be closer. But now if they're not able to study what they want to study or at least learn or be exposed to different viewpoints, like, it's kind of like, well, then what's the alternative? Go to a private school and be in fucking thousands and thousands of dollars of debt. Like, it's so fucked up. Like, and also these aren't children. These are kids who are 18, 21, you know, old enough to serve in the military, but they're not old enough to learn about bell hooks. Like,
yeah, there's something really sinister to me, exactly to your point, Millie, about basically saying like, we're going to make it so a large swath of like poor kids, brown kids, poor women who are more likely to be affected by their abortion bans aren't going to have access to classes that will help them question their situation or examine the root causes of like things that have caused real pain and suffering in these kids' lives. Like they should be able to go to college, a poor Black kid from Florida should be able to go to college and like engage in critical race theory and learn more about their own situation. But now the government in Florida is basically like, no, we're going to deny you access to that.
Yeah. It is very interesting that a lot of the conversation has been stop talking about critical race theory, Ron DeSantis. It's a college thing. And now he's like, okay, I'm going to go after it in college. And like you were saying, it's like, if you're going to, like, these are adults that are paying for their education. Like, what are you going to teach them? They're going to get there day one and they are going to, like, memorize the preamble? That's not what they're paying for. They are paying to take the classes that are going to get them to their professional goals. They can select those. But, you know, we're talking about just, you know, not having these types of classes. But I want to go into detail about just how draconian they want to go about this. So the bill would also ban the use of public funds to, quote, promote, support, or maintain any programs or campus activities that, quote, espouse diversity, equity, or inclusion. But none of these are really defined, and that's on purpose. They just want to scare people, I think, out of even getting close to these topics. Like, if they don't define diversity, equity, inclusion, then they don't have to tell you what you can say. State lawmakers have also proposed demanding colleges provide a list of all staff involved in groups or teaching related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and even potentially retain emails, text messages, and social media messages from those people. So that would become evidence if this bill becomes law. There is more, like Millie was talking about, there's a lot of sort of like political interference with all education and in terms of the state colleges. Political appointees are on the board of trustees, and they are going to have potentially more influence over faculty hiring decisions. They've already fired the president of New College, and they want to weaken the tenure system. So even professors who theoretically can say whatever they want would not feel safe speaking freely. They basically just don't want any college professor that works in the public Florida, you know, school university system to feel like they can talk about literally these through diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're not even talking about critical race theory yet. This is what's so like kind of wild to me is like a year ago, a lot of these people and their supporters were saying, no, we're just talking about critical race theory in elementary school. We just don't want that. And we're like, okay, it's not there, but whatever. And here we are a year later, and they're like, no, we don't want critical race theory anywhere, not in the colleges, not anywhere where our money is going. And yeah, exactly for the reason says, it's easy for some people to say, well, I won't go to those schools, but that's not an option for most people that want a secondary education.
Yeah, it's really like comically villainous. Like, it's very much, again, I think we've said this before on the pod, plot of the fifth Harry Potter book. It's the plot of Wicked. Like, they're rounding up the professors of shiz. It's happening. And it is always scary when access to certain types of knowledge are being tamped down. Colleges have always been a source of political activism. We've seen it again and again. And so I could see this law being interpreted to say, like, you can't have a Black student union. I remember University of Delaware had like a Latina sorority. Like, can you have that stuff? Can you have the, I mean, I know they don't call it Gay Straight Alliance anymore, but can't, whatever it's called now, like, can you still have that on your campus? It feels like, It feels like this type of thing is designed to be like, you can try, but it's going to make a lot of trouble and no professor is going to want to be associated with it. And I think that the fact that they're attacking professors and they're attacking the actual educators means that a lot of really good professors are probably not going to want to teach in Florida anymore. So they're further degrading the education that these like students are going to get, because number one, they can't take all the classes they want to take. And number two, they're getting professors who, I mean, maybe some people will stick around in like a morally to help the kids, but they're also, I think if professors have other opportunities, they're going to take them elsewhere where they can actually teach their subject and not be worried that because they said something about, I don't know, race or how race plays into one of their subjects, because it plays into almost every single subject you could possibly fucking teach, that they're going to lose their tenure and they're going to lose their job and they're going to get sued by the state and all of this other crap.
Yeah. And then veterans are going to teach grad school with no degrees. Just, I mean, like that's they're what doing
they want.
With regular
that's
teachers.
What they
yeah.
want. They're literally getting exactly. education. It's- like, already there's a teacher shortage in Florida. They're literally like making it so hostile for K through 12 teachers. And now they're going to do that for colleges. And it's just like, it's literally a long-term goal to get more uneducated people and probably a multicultural uneducated people so that they can build their voting bloc instead of doing anything to change. And again, like, there are serious issues in Florida right now. I mean, I feel like I'm feeling such a boomer.
I feel like you and the head of the like Miami Dade Socialist Club have the same for you page.
Yeah. Well, no, but I'm also like that video that I made came out over the weekend. I'm like, I want to mute these comments, but there are real, like, there are really serious
issues. Don't look at
those,
Millie.
I don't know how to mute them. But it's like, oh, they're mentioning you. Issues, yeah. In Florida. And I'm just like, the cynic in me is like, this is a long-term voting, like, to create this voter block. And also, I'm like, this is how he's fucking creating buzz for his stupid election. Is like, Black History Month, he's going to glean in and fucking try to ban African American studies. And Women's History Month is about to start, and he's trying to ban fucking gender studies. And what the fuck is going to happen, Native American? Like, he's just going to keep going instead of,
he's again. He stole our content calendar.
Yeah, he's starting a content calendar and using bills to do this. And he's talking about taxpayer money being lost with zombie studies. How much fucking taxpayer money is he wasting doing this shit?
Yeah, and sending immigrants all over the place and on planes to do stunts and
tax breaks for idiots. Yeah.
And investigating drag shows and stuff. It's like he's wasting unbelievable amounts of money on issues that don't exist. But you're 100% right that this is all because he wants to be the Republican nominee in 2024. And this is how he knows how to get headlines. He doesn't know how to get headlines by doing anything that'll actually help Florida with, like, the ecological crisis that is going on down there, like helping with actually improving their educational scores in people's economic situation.
Office.
Yeah. Well, and housing has literally gone up so significantly. Just like the people in my family cannot afford to, like, renting has gone so crazy, purchasing a house. And again, because they keep, like, lauding tax breaks, all these people from different places who sold their houses in cash are going to Florida buying up, and private companies are buying up property too. And like, people can't afford to live there, you know? So it's just getting to this point where it's literally going to be retirees. No one's going to be working at a grocery store. Like, it's going to be this huge divide, and that's what Ron DeSantis is fueling. And instead of addressing that or actually working for working class people, he's banning people reading from Eventsler and Jackson.
Well, the future of Florida is simply not important to him. It does not matter to him.
No.
He would like his address to be in Washington, D.C. in 4 years. He is unconcerned with what this does to the schools because his kids don't go to these schools and he doesn't plan to keep them there.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Another, we have to stay on Republican Unite for another absolutely hard to believe story. We've been discussing some of the state level conservative lawmakers' aspirations to ban drag performances for a while now. And we now have a state that has become the first to pass that legislation. It is Tennessee. The pair of bills would ban, quote, adult cabaret performances, including male or female impersonators, from taking place in public or any location where the performance could just be viewed by a minor. I know this is, like, not funny, but, like, the amount of times I leave my house, I look like a man, I'm wearing a baseball cap. Like, imagine just getting arrested in Nashville because somebody thinks you're just like, there's a kid over there and you're in drag.
Yeah.
A first violation of the law would be a Class A misdemeanor that carries a sentence of up to 11 months and 29 days in prison. Jesus. And a fine. And then subsequent violations would be classified as a felony, punishable by up to 6 years in prison. So there is another step here. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee has to sign the law, but he's widely expected to. Nashville has a thriving drag scene, and performers say they don't really understand their fate. They don't know how they're supposed to know if somebody is under 18 in the audience. Like, somebody was telling an outlet that they normally do a drag performance with like a big public performance with Dolly Parton. But like, are they going to get dragged off the stage if a cop sees that there's like a kid in the audience? And what does public even mean? Is it, you know, like, is a bar setting public for some of these laws? Not necessarily, but it doesn't matter if a kid is there, if a minor is there. But more importantly, the biggest thing here to remember and to repeat as you're talking to people about this, and this is something I need to do more, is to just repeat that drag is not adult entertainment anyway. Like, the content of drag is not inherently violent, so it doesn't need to be concealed for minors, and it is not inherently sexually explicit. Sure, there is some, like, if you're going to go to like Bushwick at 2 a.m. for an event that is clearly labeled as adults only, maybe you're going to have some sexually explicit content, but a majority of drag performances are not, and that is not the point of them. But if this bill becomes law, no one knows, like, what would Nashville Pride look like? This is an event that brings a lot of tourism to the state. And many LGBTQ business groups and other advocacy groups signed an op-ed that said, this is just bad business. This doesn't make sense. We don't know what we can do. Do you know how many fucking bachelorette parties come down here for drag brunches?
Exactly.
This is not going to work. So I think that's why there might be, you know, a little bit of hope that this governor might not sign it, though he has been happy to sign anti-trans legislation in the past. And just a couple other things here is that the, you know, advocates note that any, like I said, drag is not adult entertainment. So drag is already... like, drag is not exempt from public obscenity rules. It's not like you can be naked as long as it's – like, there are already laws that can catch the type of offense that these laws are designed to catch, to prevent children from seeing. And I just thought this was really noteworthy and worth saying that in the state of Tennessee, no drag performer or business sponsoring a drag performance has ever been charged under Tennessee's obscenity laws.
It's, they literally do not want these people to exist in public is really the thing, right? And – you know, I admittedly am not a white woman, so I've never been to Nashville, but, but, you know, again, I imagine that, you know, I know it's a big place with a lot of bars and stuff. And I imagine that if it's like Vegas or if it's like Miami or something,
it's like the biggest music city in the
exactly
country.
but with, or in New Orleans too,
the
way that you get people to come into your restaurant or bar is that you leave the doors or windows open and people can kind of get a sense of the scene, and if people are walking by and seeing a really fun drag performance, they'll be like, oh, let's go check that out. And maybe some of those people who are walking by have a, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. This is just not tenable for a business to have. You know, again, drag performances, people walking by and seeing that, they're like, oh, I want to go in there and see what's up with that. And if there's one person that has a kid walking by, like, come on, it's not about. And again, most of the time, even in Bushwick, as I've seen a lot, if you've seen a drag performer, get ready. They're wearing many, many, many
it
layers.
Is so far
they're
from
wearing
nudity.
Three fucking they're... wigs. They're wearing, because they're changing outfits and stuff. Like, it is not, it is a costume.
We need to watch, we need to have Ron to see these people watch a drag queen go through their tucking process. And then I think that they will be fairly certain that no kids are seeing anything.
Well, the thing that's perverse to them is literally a man dressed
exactly,
like
exactly.
A woman. It's not right. About the sexual exactly. Stuff. And again, it's about, honestly, drag culture has gone mainstream. Drag Race is probably one of the only things keeping Viacom alive at this point. I mean, let's be real. And yeah, it's just, these people cannot handle, again, how quickly, and again, quick is relative because people have been doing drag forever, but people cannot handle how, in their eyes, quickly the pendulum has swung, how out of touch they became, how it mass general culture, how Drag Race tours sell the fuck out. You know, they can't handle it, and they want to like take the clock back by using laws, you know, to do it. And it's just disturbing and sad. And also, like, something that I thought was really interesting and cool is that in every like article, they're using people dressed up as Dolly Parton in drag, and literally the same outfits. That's kind of the beauty of drag, is taking the same outfits that a famous pop star has made and seeing someone replicate it with much less ink, you know? That's part of the creativity and the beauty. So it's like, if you're cool with seeing Dolly Parton's titties in a low cleavage shirt, you're going to be, you know? And again, it's like, these people don't care, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think that what's like, what's interesting is like, in our, we've had these laws and gotten rid of them before. Like, this is hearkening back to some really dark shit that used to govern everywhere, where you had to have 3 gender appropriate pieces of clothing on at all times. Mm-hmm. Those are like the laws that were in place when like the Stonewall riot happened, which mm-hmm. is like, was a big part of just like policing trans people, but also drag performances not being allowed in general. And it raises all these questions that were raised back then and were reasons why all of these laws were found to be fucking ridiculous. Because it's like, what are 3 gender appropriate articles of clothing? Because to some people, for me to have like pants on is not gender appropriate articles of clothing or whatever. So there's that element of it. And also, we used to have a ton of laws that governed what people could say and do on stage. Like Lenny Bruce was arrested constantly for talking about anything to do with sex, even at shows that were for adults in comedy clubs. And it actually like ruined his life to do that. He went up against that. So all of these laws are also things that we've done before to the detriment of art, culture, LGBTQ people, marginalized people, society. Like, we've literally been here before, and everyone was like, these are actually pretty bad.
Well, and I mean, I can't help but think about the people who would be enforcing this. And I mean, again, this is a conversation that these are things that have happened, that have been done before. And it's, I mean, it's a huge conversation people have now about pride parades and if police should even be allowed in pride parades and marching, because so much of what cops did back in the day was literally fucking monitor historical people's clothing.
Villain. Yeah.
Historically, like making sure that men aren't kissing other men, you know, and arresting people for that. Yeah. So it's just, and I mean, I think that's a really great point. There's this really, a really great podcast, Left Anchor. and it had Michael Hobbs and another trans rights activist. And they talk a lot about, you know, all these like, you know, all the, they really talk about the New York Times, like reactionary articles and op-ed pieces that are anti-trans. But what really is sticking out is that a lot of the same language is used from gay marriage and from the things that people, you know, people complained about gay, you know, and it, they're literally reusing it again. It's not, it's like a textbook thing, you know? So nothing that they're doing is exciting or different. It's just like unfortunate that we just can't learn this lesson.
Yeah. I think something that I've had to remember too, and Matt and Bowen said this on Las Culturistas, is that it's like the drag stuff, it's also they're targeting it because it's kind of like what they think is the most visible representation of queerness, because what is being gay if not like not adhering to the biggest gender norm there is? So they're always going to reach for the most like culturally visible, relevant thing that's attached to a queerness. So it's like, yeah, it's hard to figure out their logic for going after this because there isn't any. It's just they're like, it's the gayest thing that we don't like and that we can go after.
And it's like, if you don't want your kids to see drag queens, don't let your kids see drag queens.
What does Beyonce say? It's like, I don't parent your kids. You parent your kids. Like,
yeah, Cardi B says that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's honestly, but again, it's not a, you know, the Republican philosophy, conservative philosophy is like, I can tell you what to do. You can't tell me what to do. And that's that on that.
Yeah. Speaking of hide your kids, hide your wife. In Los Angeles, Harvey Weinstein, this is where we're moving on to, you heard it here.
Women talking. Sorry. She said.
Oh, yeah. I still need to watch that. In Los Angeles, Harvey Weinstein was sentenced to another 16 years in prison for 3 counts of rape and sexual assault. So we have our next set of stories. It's kind of a good news, bad news situation. The good news is that Harvey Weinstein will probably die in prison. The bad news is that R. Kelly might not. I kind of feel a little abolitionist ping saying that, but here's the background. So Weinstein was charged with 7 counts of rape and sexual assault in Los Angeles, and the jury found him not guilty of one and could not decide on 3 others. So that was 7 charges, and those were already down from 11, but the prosecutors had dropped 4, just like random evidence. But just a lot of allegation and activity here. You know, even 5 years after, there's just so many women and survivors who were available to potentially be, plaintiffs here. The victims weren't named publicly, but one did come forward after the verdict. I think it was an Eastern European model in her 50s. And this will add to Weinstein's existing 23-year sentence for rape and sexual assault in New York. He'll serve them concurrently. So as soon as he's done, he'll be bi-coastal, I guess. As soon as he's done with his 23 years in New York, he'll head out to LA and then finish 16 years there. And, you know, this is an old man, and it would take an incredibly healthy man to live another, 40 years. I don't think that's Mr. Weinstein. So the kind of takeaway here is that this basically guarantees that Harvey Weinstein will die in prison. And that's a statement we can, I guess, finally make 5 years after Me Too. Another, a little bit more kind of context for some recent headlines, and then we'll get into kind of a broader Me Too reflection, is that R. Kelly got some news suggesting he could get out of prison by the time he's 80. So R. Kelly is 56, and a judge handed down a 20-year sentence for child sex abuse convictions, but he can basically serve those simultaneously. So he's already serving 30. The judge says that he could serve this sentence simultaneously with those New York federal racketeering and sex trafficking convictions rather than like after he completed the sentence. He might have to do like a couple extra years or something, but you know, one factor that led to the judge rejecting a consecutive sentence, keeping Kelly in prison for life, was one, he was like, he's not going to live to 100. Just like, I don't know, it's just sort of like, just let him out or something. He's going to be 80. He might not even live until then. But also was that he seemed to not necessarily buy from the prosecution that the young girls that R. Kelly groomed feared for their physical well-being. It was clear that they were worried they were going to lose affection, that they could lose material benefits, but that he said, it just doesn't seem, I believe it was a man, it just doesn't seem to me that it rises to the fear of bodily harm. So that was part of it.
Didn't he like fully kidnap people?
He beat his wife, like whatever.
But. I don't want to be around that man. I'm scared to be around that man.
Yeah. There's also, if someone's sexually assaulting you, you probably fear for your bodily.
Yeah, these are committing crimes every day.
Yeah.
So it's really crazy for him to be charged with the things he's charged with, but and found guilty on these charges, but have someone say that the victims could have been not afraid for their bodily
and that affects like, the sentencing. Yeah.
During that time.
Well, you know, how old is this judge? When was the last, like, he's never been, you know, he's a man. You know, there's a lot of shit.
I know there's a lot of good reasons to, like, no, those are, there. I know there's a lot of good reasons to have people serve sentences simultaneously, but it's like, I don't know, if I were a criminal, I'd be like, why stop now? I'm just going to serve them alongside each other. But, you know, this is, like I said, 5 years after, 5 years and change after the Me Too movement basically started with Harvey Weinstein. And now we have him, you know, once again, I think we knew he was going to die in prison before, but now he's probably definitely going to die in prison. And these are the marquee convictions of that movement. So we're 5 years later. And, you know, I think the prominent kind of related headlines are Amber Heard kind of being eviscerated in the press. Time's up. I don't know if you guys saw the ceased operations because of a lot of weird internal weirdness, some of which involved simping for Andrew Cuomo. So a lot of not great outcomes at the other side of this. But, you know, to end here, how do you guys think the eruption of the Me Too movement continues to impact how we talk about gender and power today? You know, sometimes it seems like I never work with men, but I do think that there's like, I feel like men generally don't put on the same moves that they used to. And they're very aggressively, oh, is this a Me Too thing about, you know, like, it does seem like at the absolute worst levels in terms of men with power literally raping subordinates, it seems like there's more awareness for that. But what else do you guys think has changed that's meaningful?
I feel like it really, I mean, not to use Twitter terms, but it really was a cultural reset for how we talked about power and gender dynamics. I think that we, you know, and And I think that people are very quick to call out the overcorrection or oversimplification of a lot of things. And it's like, oh, Louis C.K. or even like the Aziz Ansari thing. But I do think that it began a conversation that we're still 5 years later learning how to have. And we talk about the clumsiness and on all of that. And you know, about what it means to actually have power over someone. What does no actually mean? What does yes mean? I appreciate that, like, you know, without convicting someone like Harvey Weinstein, we cannot begin to have conversations, or, you know, the conversations we're having now about what does it mean for coercion, which is another thing that we're still learning how to talk about and discuss about, like, people wearing someone down and all those things. You know, I do think, like, my TikTok algorithm are people every day talking about uncomfortable conversations and all that. So I do think that these things are, these two cases being so extreme, like the whatever, have really set the tone and allowed people space to talk about these things. I think personally, where I would love to see the movement go, or what I would like to see in the future, is that, yes, Harvey Weinstein's a terrible person. Yes, R. Kelly's a terrible person. I mean, I know in the case of R. Kelly, he's had a lot of abuses and stuff like in his life to him. So, like, you know, abusers abuse, you know, whatever. But at the same time, both of them are great examples of men who had infrastructures around them, supporting, enabling, pushing, and all those people that did that are basically off scot-free. Like Harvey Weinstein, you know, that's the entire premise of The Assistant, you know, and all this stuff is that they have, and all those people have now moved on to other jobs and other roles. And I would love to see some accountability and some discussion about the people that enable and allow this to move forward. And that's where I feel like we're missing. But I do think that in talking about the most extreme examples, we have had a cultural reset that has affected everybody. But again, Amber Heard, Megan Thee Stallion is another one where, you know, that's a woman who was not believed. Not so. We still have a long way to go, but it has done something.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Millie had to say. I think that the Me Too movement was a huge awakening, especially for the younger generations that were going through it, about like what is and is not acceptable. And I think people are just more comfortable speaking out. That's mm-hmm. not to say that it's like easy to speak out, but I mean, you see on TikTok and all of this stuff with Gen Z, like, that women are more willing to call out bad dates or talk about their experiences or say, like, this person was creepy to me, or speak up for themselves in those moments. It's the situation still has a long way to go. And I think that we've also seen a massive backlash from people who want to hold on to the other mentality. Again, with the way, like with the Amber Heard stuff that we saw, I think there is a large contingent of people who are of the opinion that Me Too was good at first, but went too far, kind of. And like, and that some people were unfairly, I think Al Franken is held up as someone who was like, quote unquote, unfairly canceled. But sorry, Amanda, you're muted. Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah, I think Al Franken is held up as someone where it's like the jury's still out on people who, how people feel about him and what happened with him, and was it right for Democrats to kick him out? I mean, he's hosting the new Daily Show, so it's like he's hosting one of the new episodes. He's not like the official host. So it seems like he's doing fine at this point. He's back in comedy. Great. Louis C.K. sold out Madison Square Garden. So like the conversation is actually still ongoing, but I agree with the idea that it was a cultural reset and it was just an awakening to these issues on a massive, massive scale.
Yeah, I think you both nailed it. Like, cultural reset sort of implies like we all kind of reset our expectations. And then there were some proactive changes in response to that. I feel like in the 5 years since, like, the Whisper Networks have just gotten a lot louder. And yes, not every man who commits a crime or who deserves to be fired necessarily always is. But I think like women be talking a little bit more. I mean, I just sort of like, you guys know, if we're ever going to like, I've taken to like, if we're ever going to interact with like a straight male comedian, I'm like, is this guy good? Because apparently it was an open secret that Louis C.K. was jerking off on ladies for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely noticed more kind of like, not like sexist, like, is this guy okay? But you know, you want to know what you're like getting into. And I think people are a lot more forthcoming and willing to kind of like be frank about those things, because we've also seen in the 5 years since that the promise of having all of it validated and having every man who was responsible for wrongdoing, you know, taken care of, obviously didn't happen. So yeah, I think that, like you guys said, there's been some kind of headlines recently that I've wondered, like, are these kind of like reactions like Me Too went too far, or just work left to be done? And I think it's just like some men are always going to have a deep hatred of women. And I think Me Too kind of like infused this, but they're also not truthful, which has actually just been a thing around kind of like women all of the time. But it is, you know, I think that we deserve, you know, every outcome possible. But it is pretty wild that these two men are very likely going to die in prison, like finally, after decades of operating like this openly and it being an open secret. And now like they're bi-coastal inmates.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, everyone's like, these guys are such monsters. How could, you know, think about the harm that they've caused on so many women and so many children, you know, for them to get prosecuted like this.
Exactly.
But at the same time, if we've had, you know, I think that had somebody in R. Kelly's camp or Harvey Weinstein's camp intervened earlier, if we've prosecuted earlier, you know, R. Kelly from 2003 was having court cases in 2003 about this, you know? So the fact that, you know, endless amount of victims, you know, it's just like, it hasn't gone this radical thing. And then also, yeah, like there are, you know, ton of people still letting these things happen. So
Yeah, it's not like a triumphant closing chapter. It's just like, this is what we should have expected for a long time. That is our show for today. Please remember to rate and review if you love the show, especially our new format. If you're liking it, tell people why in the reviews. It's good to let people know what you like about the show, what they can look forward to. It just helps. It helps. We need help. Help us. I don't know. That was weird. Take that out. Sorry. I'll read you the
help
ending.
Us. Help.
Help. Stop scrolling.
Stop scrolling.
That is our show for today. Please remember to rate and review, especially if you're liking this new format. Tell us what you like about it. Tell potential listeners what you like about it so they know what they're getting into and that they'll love the show too. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.